All right, you got it on KHUM. And joining me via telephone from Santa Barbara this morning is Jeannie Cachell. Good morning.
Good morning, Cliff.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I understand it's kind of overcast where you are.
It is, just a bit overcast here in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll sun up. It's Southern California, huh? So it's required by law. So anyway, speaking of sunshine, you spent a lot of time down south and have been able to gather lots of great data. The book that you have out is called Maya 2012 Revealed, Demystifying the Prophecy. And of course, the prophecy is the end of the world prophecy. And I'll tell you what, this is really his, I don't know, for some reason, just really taken hold big time, especially with younger folks. I've, along with doing radio, I also teach a class at Humboldt State University. And for like 3 years now, this has been... this has been like on topic for
right.
the kids. I don't know why that is. I don't know why we gravitate towards these end of the world prophecies. I mean, as I said, I've been around, you know, almost 55 years, and I've seen tons of them come and
right.
go.
Right. Well, I think this one is really different because, first of all, the Maya, they could not break the Maya code until around 1998. So, for as long as I can remember, we thought of them as this mysterious indigenous culture who built these incredible stepped pyramids in the jungles of southern Mexico and Guatemala, Belize, and Honduras. So this steeped them in mystery, and then along comes this calendar. And the calendar, it's actually not it's the end of a calendar cycle, the end of their 13th Bakhtun. And a Bakhtun is 5,125 years. And the reason that 13 is special to the Maya is because there are 13 layers in Maya heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the end of their calendar, but it is not the end of time. The Maya are doing ceremonies now in southern Mexico and Guatemala. Many of the Maya still practice the ancient ways, which I think is great. And the kind of cool thing is that everybody says, well, the Maya are gone. Absolutely not. They're 7 million strong, and they're here. They are still a very big factor to be reckoned with.
That's fantastic. You know, it's kind of funny, and I've explained that because I've read that also. You know, that's the end of the calendar, not the end of time. I've read that in several different accounts of that. You know, you try to explain that to some people, they just won't hear it.
It's very true. And actually, I have to admit, while I was researching, I owned a bookstore in Puerto Morelos, Mexico, this tiny little fishing village for many, many years. And it was just wonderful because I happened to be right in the middle of Maya country. So through its doors walked archaeologists, tour guides, local Maya. It was a Mayan village. And I learned a lot firsthand. And also, when I wasn't talking to customers, I was reading. And that's pretty much what immersed me in this whole Maya culture thing. I was right there at the source. But the deal is that there are a lot of books done by 2012ologists. The biggest two are called The Maya Factor by Jose Arguelles, who has now passed away, and by John Major Jenkins, who wrote Maya Cosmogenesis 2012. And while I was getting into the Jose Arguelles one, I started to go, wow, this is really far out. It's almost like science fiction, because his take on it was that the Maya were actually like space travelers, and through their DNA it was encoded that they would come down in one Bakhtun only, which was roughly 400 years from like 700 to 900 A.D., and that they would put a code into the pyramids. And through this code, if we as humanity were alert enough to notice it, we could be saved. So I'm going, wow, this is wild. But then reason took over. I'm a journalist by trade. And I kept on researching, and I did realize that a lot of the fur that is involved with it really comes from the fact that it's kind of a Western European mentality, which is not really wanting to give an indigenous culture their due. That's what I kind of came up with. Because even back in 1837, when two explorers stumbled onto the pyramids in Copan, Honduras, they kept thinking, well, maybe they're Egyptian, related to the Egyptians, maybe Atlantis even, of course, and where was Atlantis even real? But it was hard for the Western European mind to get around the fact that this indigenous culture on our own continent, North America, built these incredible pyramids. But they did, and they ruled. And they ruled for almost 1,500 years, which is pretty incredible when you look at the way things are now.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's just a really incredible story. And the other thing that's very, very interesting is that when the Maya were at their height in 800 to 900 AD, Europe was in the throes of the Dark Ages. So while Europe slept, the Maya were experiencing this incredible culture.
That was their Renaissance.
Exactly. Right. That's right. You got it.
Absolutely. Now, Jeannie, before we go much deeper into this, let's get a little background on you and what led you from being a publisher in the Bay Area and a journalist down to Mexico and getting into this.
Well, about 1982 or 83, my husband and I saw this great movie called Against All Odds, and the focal points of the movie were Tulum, the pyramids at Tulum, and maybe some of your listeners have been there. It's this stunning pyramid on the edge of the Turquoise Sea in the Caribbean in southern Mexico with these white sand beaches. And the other focal point was Chichen Itza, and the Chichen Itza pyramids are now one of the seven major wonders of the modern world. Anyway, once we saw these, and I'd gone to Mexico many, many times in my youth because it's a very short hop from California, I wanted to go to Maya Mexico. I'd always only go on to Baja or to, like, Acapulco, Mazatlan, Puerto Vallarta. Once I saw these, I knew I had to see the Maya pyramids. And one thing led to another. We ended up buying land there, built a house. And then in 1997, we left our Bay Area jobs, and we went to this little tiny fishing village called Puerto Morelos, which is 30 miles south of Cancun, but at the time it was like nothing, nada. And at the time, also, there were no bookstores in the state, so I thought it would be really a great hobby, because I'm a readaholic, to open a bookstore, and that's when I opened the bookstore, too.
Cool. And what led you to look into the Maya in such depth?
Well, once we got there, at first, of course, in 83, when we first started traveling there, I mean, Quintana Roo, which is the state that Cancun and Puerto Morelos are in, was just nothing. You have to realize that there's only one road from Cancun down to Belize, and you could stand on that road for hours at that time and not see a bus, a car, a motorbike, nothing. It was just so empty. But the pyramids and the beaches were just so incredible. And so I just started to really, we went to all the sites that we could. I mean, I can't tell you how many I've been to. And every one was just really awesome. And a lot of them, especially back then, even now in some of the remote places, are very non-populated. There's no tourists. So you can wander around these wonderful places, and you can have, like, a science fiction moment yourself, because you're just wandering out in the jungle, and you hear howler monkeys in the background, which sounds like lions roaring, and you see birds, and, you know, it's just this wonderful experience. So I was just drawn in. I was mystified, and I was just knocked over by them.
Fantastic. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, the thing that you talked about with the legend of the Maya being space travelers, mm-hmm. and whatnot. I remember there was a movie that came out in the 70s. And I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it was, you know, about that, you know, we'd been visited by aliens in the past, and it was showed all these different things, and it showed the pyramids, and it showed, you know, those big markings on the ground, and there was a glyph inside one of the pyramids that they said, if you look at it this way, this actually looks like an astronaut, you know,
right.
on his back working all the controls.
Mm-hmm.
it was like, and that was back then.
Sure.
This was long before this whole thing got big.
Right. There's one book, and I can't recall the name of it now, that was really big in, I think, the early 80s. And it was by a German fellow who wrote that, like, even Machu Picchu, that many of the stepped pyramids were built by by people from, you know, extraterrestrials. And there's actually another big segment, not only John Major Jenkins and Jose Arguelles, but Barbara Clawhand out of New Mexico has written books to that effect. So actually, when I was in the bookstore, there was a large segment of the population that believes that that could be the case, too. But I really, after really doing the research, I came to the conclusion that yes, this, what we consider an indigenous culture who actually came over, they believe, the anthropologist, the Bering Land Bridge and around 11,000 BC and found their way to southern Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, and Honduras, that they actually had this amazing culture and that, yes, they built the pyramids. And so I think that it's only fair to give the Maya their due. And they are actually considered in the pantheon of the top cultures and civilizations of the world. And the way that that comes about is you have to have a writing system, you have to have a dynasty, you have to have trade routes and a religion. And they had all those things. And mostly it was the writing system. And if you recall in the book, the really sad thing was when the conquest came, the conquistadors, there was one particularly zealous bishop, and they had these written books. They were on paper bark at the time, and some of them were 11 feet long, and they composed all of the astronomical figures and depictions of the planets, the sun, Venus, which was very important to them, right, and the moon. And they were destroyed, all but three. And the reason that we have been able to break the code is, thank God, these three were hidden, and they surfaced in Madrid, Dresden, and Paris. And through almost 200 years of research, that helped crack the code.
That's right. In fact, there's a whole section in this book about breaking the code. Just fascinating stuff. Really, really wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about the book, because it is available. It's not a huge read, so you know, you don't have to be daunted by that. And and it's available in several formats, including ebooks.
Right, ebooks, paperback, Amazon.com. It will be coming to bookstores soon. But right now, if somebody wants a paperback copy, it's easy to order on Amazon.com. And if anybody has any questions, they can go to my website, JeaneKitchell.com, and or just Google Maya 2012 Revealed on Amazon. But yeah, it's available, and it's getting some nice reviews.
Yeah, it's really really wonderful stuff. And you know, if you really are interested in you know, more than just the myth, lots of great stuff. This is a really amazing culture. You know, I studied it a little bit in school, but this is you know so in depth, and it's got such really cool stuff. And I'm glad that you mentioned that they're still around. I mean, the myth is that they're all completely gone.
No, 7 million strong. And the wonderful thing now is they are taking a relook at their own roots. And so there's an embracing of the Maya. In fact, the way that they look at the end of this 13th Bactun, or this 5,125-year cycle, it's a time of renewal. And so the ceremonies that are going on in southern Mexico are incredible. There's a lot of, it's almost like Day of the Dead type ceremonies, with lots of incense, candles, burnings, and homage to Mother Earth. And so they are looking at it as a time of renewal. And they are strengthening. And they are also now allowed in Mexico to have Maya in the schools, and they're relearning their language, which was more or less frowned on for many, many years and decades. So there's a great emergence of the Maya, where they are becoming empowered, and I think that's incredible.
I think it's absolutely, absolutely wonderful that's going on, because I mean, that kind of, you know, these kind of cultural things can easily be just obliterated completely.
True.
And it's good to see that it's that there's some resurgence of this.
There is.
Fantastic.
There is. And it's empowering to me to see it as well.
Now, you've, of course, spent a lot of time down there. What does the average modern Mayan think of this Western obsession with their calendar signaling the end of the world?
Well, for the most part, some people don't know anything about it. Other people are aware of it, and they ignore it. And then there are many people who believe that it's just the end of a cycle, because to the Maya, it was all about time. To us, time is something that passes, but to the Maya, it's cycles, and it's cycles of time. So it's almost like they're looking at it like the Y2K phenom, that it's a time when it's a turnover, and they are looking, the Maya elders, more or less to say, Cliff, are looking at it as a time that we can renew our resources and that we can set things straight. And that's why there is so much homage right now and so many ceremonies towards Mother Earth. And what's incredible is that this ceremony for them lasts like the whole year. It's a really big time for the ceremonies. It's not just one particular date, December 21st. And also, you have to remember, too, and you've done, it sounds like, studies in anthropology and various histories, that there is wiggle room on a particular end date.
Sure.
And so, like, they're really thinking that there's like a 200-year wiggle room, because this also codes with the precession of the equinoxes, which I tell about in the book, and it's much too detailed to get into here. But it is also another 26,000-year cycle when our sun or solar system will align with the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And some scholars say, well, it would have been impossible for the Maya to have known this. But in my research, I also found out that the Greeks were aware of the precession, as were the Chinese. So I say, why not the Maya?
There you go.
They were naked eye astronomers, which meant that through just sight and volume of research, day after day, year after year, century after century, they computed the minutiae of time in these paperback books. So they knew where everything was at.
Cool. And that's detailed in chapter 6. If you're interested
right.
in that, you can check that out. Again, the book is called Maya 2012 Revealed, Demystifying the Prophecy. It's Jeannie Kuchel. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
It was really a pleasure.
Yeah, it absolutely was. It went by really fast. And folks, if you want more about this, and there's so much more that we could talk about today, check out the book at Amazon.com and soon at a bookstore near you.
Thanks, Cliff.
Jeannie, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Take care.
All righty. We've got it on KHUM.